From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When you have a story like Joe Darger's, it's best just to come out with it. And in a new book, he does. One paragraph into the introduction, he lays it out. "I am a polygamist," he says. "I live in a suburb of Salt Lake City with my three wives, Alina, Vicky, and Valerie, and our 23 children." And there it is. Joe has just outed his family, which had been quietly living a polygamous relationship for more than 20 years. There are a number of reasons Joe and his wives went public. They wanted to show the world the variations in Mormon fundamentalism, to show how they live a pretty mainstream life. Today in the program, the Dargers are joining us to talk about their lives together, which they say are inspired by faith and personal choice. Love times three, after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For years, Joe Darger and his wives, his three wives, Alina, Vicky, and Valerie, lived what they call the principle pretty much in private. It wasn't exactly a secret to those close to them, neighbors and such, but they weren't exactly making the decision to live this way public. There were a number of things that led them to actually go public, some things that were personal, other things that were public, like the stories of certain polygamous sects that were making headlines. The Dargers wanted to correct the record, clear up what they say is a public portrait of their culture that is often inaccurate and at times harmful. So they have participated in writing a book which they argue is reveals the inner workings of their family life. And they say, aside from that one obvious detail, their lives are pretty much as mainstream as it gets. Today in the program, they're joining us to talk about the book. It's called Love Times Three, Our True Story of a Polygamous Marriage. And we invite you to join the conversation if you like. Comments or questions, 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. All right, let me introduce everyone here. And one of you doesn't have a headphones that's working, but it's okay. We'll fix that as we go. Joe, Alina, Vicky, and Valerie Darger make their home in Salt Lake County. Joe, Alina, and Vicky married 21 years ago, and Vicky's twin sister Valerie joined the family in 2000. They still have 20 of their 24 children living at home. Their book, as I mentioned, I mentioned the title of the book. Brooke Adams wrote the book with the Darger family, and she's with us here in the studio as well, a reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune, reported on polygamy for many years, now covers poverty, child welfare, domestic violence, and adoption. And Brooke, welcome to you. And Joe, Alina, Vicky, and Valerie, welcome to you as well. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
I should mention tomorrow evening you're going to be giving a reading at the King's English Bookshop, and we'll give details about that as we go along. Joe, I want to start with you.
Yes. So
you begin the book talking about this time when you are feeling this anxiety, but panicky is how you describe it, as you're preparing to watch the finale of the HBO series about polygamy, Big Love.
Mm-hmm.
This is June of 2006.
Right.
Butterflies in your stomach, you say.
Yeah.
What's going on at this time?
It's a familiar feeling with what I grew up with, a little anxiety, fear. You know, it's certainly, I describe, you know, feeling the burning in your ears. You know, sometimes you get that tingling, like just an anxiety, you know, panicky feeling that anytime your family, your life is portrayed or the people are talking about this subject, it's just very common growing up with that. Just that, you know, I'd be in school and, you know, Utah history in seventh grade, of course. The P word comes up, or any time
it would come
up. That particular time was particularly poignant for me because it was my life. It was a story right out of our life, and we had not consulted or talked to the writers of Big Love, and so to see a personal experience portrayed in a dramatic fashion was unnerving for me.
It seems like you saw some kind of, and I'm not sure if this is the way you would put it, but kind of divine purpose in Big Love. Does that make sense?
Well, I think, I guess maybe to put it more in context, it makes sense. I wouldn't describe that I see big love as a divine purpose. But early on, we had this opportunity. There was this magazine that came out, Mormon Focus. They were going to talk about the diversity among the fundamentalist Mormon culture. And we were approached to be on the cover, at least to have my three wives on the cover. And that was early on. That was right after we had gone through this, you know, story with our daughter that we talk about in the book. We lost our daughter, and we were still trying to recover from all this that drama. And we were working to kind of reach out, you know, behind the scenes to state agencies and other areas quietly. And here was this chance to go out anonymously. We didn't put our names to it. We put it on there, and we really, it was a lot of faith and prayer. As a family, we come together and prayed and said, should we do this? And we all just felt like we needed to do it. And we never understood quite why. Mm. And so I think for us, the magazine went nowhere. Yeah. We thought we would be
one episode.
Yeah, it was one episode. Right. We thought we'd be maybe plastered on the Salt Lake Tribune or something. You know, we'd be outed. People would figure out our names. Nothing ever came about that. But then later we find out that the creators of Big Love talk specifically how they were inspired by that magazine cover and this idea of three modern women in suburbia that could be live in plural marriage and that maybe it could work. And so in some ways, yeah, we think maybe our prayers were answered. Maybe there was a purpose for what we were doing, and we try to live a purpose-driven life in what we do. So if that answers that would maybe be in the context of how we feel like Big Love at least accomplished something in this story, in this evolution of a betrayal as we see our culture, hopefully now with a defined in a more complete way. But it certainly opened up the world to this idea of diversity within our culture.
There is a story that I want to have you talk about, which kind of clinched it for you. This is when you realized that, I mean, you had a hunch as you were watching Big Love that, gosh, it's kind of like ours, you know, is somebody feeding these producers elements? This is
unnerving,
us.
It was
weird,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then there's this one moment, I guess it is in the finale, when this one of the wives is revealed to be part of a plural marriage situation after she's named Beehive Mother of the Year.
Yeah.
This is your mother's story.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the finale of season one, and it was back when Mike Leavitt was the governor, yeah. Governor Leavitt, and I had naively enough just nominated my mother just to the fact that she was trying to support her family and keep her family together. My father had died; we had a huge upheaval with our family, and she really struggled a lot, and I struggled with her at times with the way our family, you know, we didn't always see eye to eye. But overall, she was such a guiding force in my life as a mother. I thought, well, I need to nominate her as for the mother she had been to me. And I just wrote a little essay, and it got accepted. And I was kind of naive to the fact that, you know, I shouldn't have been. But sometimes you forget that there's a different rules of how we're looked at. And so to see that, I mean, it was dramatized on Big Love and it was Beehive Mother of the Year.
Yeah, but wait, the thing that's kind of the critical part of the story is that you and your family show up to the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
Dressed up.
Yeah.
Because the essay won.
Yeah.
She was named one of the remarkable mothers of the year.
Right.
Word gets out somehow and an aide comes up to you.
Yeah.
Is it your mother? And says, "Can I talk to you in the?"
Yeah, they whisked my mother away, and we're sitting there. She had. I was there with some of my siblings, and they whisked her away. And then, we're looking around nervously. What's going on? And eventually, they come and say, "Are you, you know, her parent, her sons and daughters?" And sure, and they whisked them. We're in the women's restroom of the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
And you know, it was quite a pickle to be in.
Well, they give you a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
They give your mother a choice. What do they say?
I said, well, they didn't really know what to do because it's already awarded, and there was a reporter waiting to break the story, and somebody, you know, somebody had outed it, and they weren't sure what to do. And at that point, we said, well, how about if we just decline it? They didn't ask us to. We offered, and of course, that was a great political escape for them, and we just. Like so many fundamentalists do, we kind of go out the back door and you know, I remember saying to the reporter, no comment, that's all I knew. I had no experience at all with any of the press, and boy, we were bombarded for about a day, and we realized, you know, how much I hate publicity and hate being public and just want to be an anonymous person in my life.
Well, now here you are, Joe, having written a book.
I know, go figure.
So... because that is the question now, and we'll talk about the other.